Coming up in today's show, Jordan Spieth, one of the headliners this week at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. What's up with Spieth's game? Last top 10 coming nearly 7 months ago. We're going to hear from the 2017 champ at Pebble. While another past champion joins us, Peter Jacobson, a winner back in 95. But it's a moment from 8 years earlier that golf fans still talk about to this day. The human chain. Jake will share the story behind one of the most iconic moments in tournament history when we chat with the seven-time PGA Tour winner. And Schoolboy Q is in the house. How golf changed his life for the better and how he got into the game. He's going to visit with us before teeing it up in this week's event at Pebble as Golf Today starts now.
Golf Today.
Welcome inside our Golf Channel Worldwide headquarters. We're here with you for the next 2 hours on a Wednesday edition of Golf Today. I'm George Savarikas, sitting alongside a man who is always a ray of sunshine. That would be our Eamon Lynch. And Eamon, it's one of my favorite weeks of the year because we have the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. It's basically golf heaven for golf fans to get to see this course on TV for the next 4 days.
It really is. And even if you're not a fan of celebrity golf, if you're kind of agnostic on the whole Bill Murray thing, which I would put myself in that category, at least it's Pebble Beach. It's possibly the most beautiful corner of this entire country and certainly one of the most storied golf courses that we're going to see all year on tour.
And not only is it a storied course, you see all the majors it's hosted. We're going to get more into that later in the show. U.S. Women's Open coming up. But the names that have won there before at Pebble Beach, it's just golf royalty, greats of the game, Hall of Famers. You wonder who will add their name to the list this week. Remember, a year ago, it was a first-time winner in Tom Hoge. So as we continue with, just one of the best spots you can possibly head to, the scenic golf courses of the Monterey Peninsula, making their return, the pros and ams. We'll play Pebble Beach, like we mentioned, Spyglass Hill, Monterey Peninsula Country Club, first 3 days. Then if you make the cut after 54 holes, the final 18 at Pebble Beach on Sunday. Coverage beginning tomorrow at 3 Eastern on Golf Channel. A look at the notables in the field. Jordan Spieth was in the mix at the lead. Final nine wound up runner-up last year to Tom Hoge. So Jordan Spieth, one of the headliners, along with Justin Rose and reigning U.S. Open champ Matt Fitzpatrick.
Let's flash back to 2017 for a little Jordan Spieth action. He shot a 2-under par 70 in the final round, including this 30-foot birdie putt on the 17th hole that helped him cruise to a 4-stroke victory. The win was his 9th on the PGA Tour. There have been 4 more since.
All right, so Jordan Spieth, you see him on the 18th, closing things out. That was a sweet win for Jordan Spieth. If you remember that Sunday, hit all 18 greens in regulation to close out that W. He gets his first round underway with Ryan Palmer, 12:25 Eastern time. They get the journey going at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am over at Spyglass Hill Golf Course. So for more on Jordan, let's bring in our man on site this week, Todd Lewis. Todd, curious, what's the status of Jordan's game as he returns to a place he's won before?
Yeah, he's pretty optimistic. This is Jordan's 11th start here at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. In his 10 previous starts, he's got 6 top 10s. He's finished 3rd here. He finished 2nd, as you mentioned, last year, won here in 2017. So the Monterey Peninsula has been happy hunting ground for Jordan Spieth. He calls Pebble Beach one of his favorite places on the planet. Who can argue? He loves coming here. Now, the last time we saw him competitively, he was at the Sony Open. He went from leading the tournament after round one, a 64 in that opening round, to missing the cut after a 75 in the second round. He's been at home in Dallas working on his game, and I caught up with him just a few moments ago, and I asked him to give us a description of where he thinks his swing is right now.
Feels good. I mean, I was swinging well in Hawaii and just kind of had a bad day one day out of the 6 rounds, and things are really in a good spot. I feel pretty confident coming into a pretty heavy stretch. I think I'm gonna be on 7 of 8 weeks here. So trying to kind of pace it and recognize that, you know, it's try to get better each day, a little bit 1% better each day. And I know what I need to do that, and just kind of sticking to a game plan at this point.
It's a unique event. It's a pro-am. It's on three different golf courses. What are the challenges of this tournament, and how have you been able to successfully navigate them?
Well, it's certainly slower rounds. You're playing a foursome, and they're typically 5.5. They're an extra hour longer than even our threesome rounds typically. So patience, walking a little slower. I mean, I'm a quick walker off the tee, and this week you just kind of drop back, I play with Jake Owen, so he keeps it really light. I try and, you know, just have normal conversations with him, and then all of a sudden by the time you get up there, it's time to hit. So, you know, there's kind of little tricks about it, but having a partner that you like to be around is certainly an advantage. So I'm pretty fortunate to be able to play with Jake each year.
You mentioned this big stretch you're getting ready to be a part of. What are you most anticipating in this stretch in regards to your game? Are you looking forward to progressing and getting better and build?
Yeah, a lot of consistency. I mean, that's, for me, it's, you know, you always, the goal every week at the beginning of the week is to win, but in order to do so, you have to put together four really consistent rounds. And, you know, I'm trying to, you know, my win last year was probably my best example of just trying to be consistent, not get ahead of myself at Hilton Head, and I just got a little bit better each day. So trying to not try and force things early in rounds, Thursdays or Fridays, and recognize that, you know, a lot can happen, especially out here as the conditions turn around Pebble Beach, as they look like they're going to this weekend. You just got to stay really patient. But over the course of a long stretch, you just don't want to kind of get too high or too low. Just kind of stay really balanced and, you know, get out there and really commit to each shot. Feel like if you miss execute, you miss execute. But if you're committed on each one, you're going to get better each week.
You know, it's interesting. He said to me also that his Hawaii stretch, where he not only missed the cut at the Sony Open, but he did have a top 15 finish in Maui as well. He said he left Hawaii very, very positive about his game. He said he felt like he was ahead of schedule than in previous years when he left Hawaii in regards to his game. So mentally and emotionally, mechanically, he feels like he is in a pretty good spot heading into this tournament as well. And you heard him talking about not getting ahead of himself, and I had him further describe that to me. He said, like, if I'm leading after the first round, I can't start thinking about winning that tournament. You got to stay in the moment. And that's something although he missed the cut at the Sony, he felt he still was doing at the Sony Open as well. He heard him talking about Jake Owen. That's going to be his amateur partner. He's been his partner for a number of years here at Pebble Beach. He's also playing with Ryan Palmer, who's a friend of his. And Ryan's partner is Brian Roberts, the CEO of Comcast, who, Eamon and George, I know we have a personal interest as well. He's our boss, so we hope he has a good week also. But Jordan Spieth seems to be in a really positive frame of mind heading into this tournament.
Todd, don't undersell it. We hope he has a phenomenal week at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro.
Yes, we do.
All right, so here's a look at the past results for Jordan Spieth at Pebble. He has 10 career starts, 6 top 10 finishes. Like I mentioned, runner-up last year, T3 in 2021. Has won once. Do you think with those type of results, another win for Jordan Spieth should be soon, because he's clearly very comfortable playing at this event? So for more on Spieth, let's bring in the brains in the operation, Paige McKenzie. Paige, what stands out to you when we talk about Jordan Spieth at Pebble?
Yeah, well, he clearly outperforms based on the results, but he outperforms in particular in one category, especially looking at the last 3 years, where you have 3 consecutive top 10s going into this year. So let's look at what he does well at this golf course. And Pebble Beach in particular, remember, this golf course, or this tournament, rotates through different golf courses, but the strokes gained data is from Pebble Beach only. So on Pebble Beach, when you look at last year, he was number 1 in the field in strokes gained approach, and that is per round on average, 2.88 last year, 10th in 2021, and again led the field with his ninth place finish at 2.6 strokes gained per round at Pebble Beach. So outperforming in that area, and let's compare it again to what his season averages were those seasons. So this is some pretty incredible stuff when you consider that he never was in the top 30 in strokes gained approach through those 3 years, and those numbers are so vastly different and improved at Pebble Beach. And it's worth pointing out, so strokes gained is based on a baseline of how players perform from particular yardages. For example, 150 yards. Well, some golf courses are a little easier from 150 yards. Other courses, a little more difficult. Pebble Beach, the 5th most difficult that the players face this season. So it's extremely impressive that he then outperforms that much more on a golf course that most players struggle with in that category.
Right. It's remarkable that he actually is that good on strokes gained approach on greens that are actually that small. I mean, these have got to be the smallest greens they see all year on tour. He just finds a fountain of youth there.
Yeah, they're tiny. They're microscopic, basically, at Pebble Beach.
I want to ask Paige another question here. Paige, this isn't even the most high-profile event we're going to see at Pebble Beach this year. What's the level of anticipation on the LPGA Tour for this US Women's Open during the summer?
Oh, I remember when they announced it about 5 years ago. Players looking forward to finally competing in a major championship on this golf course. So much history is here, and I know we're going to dive into that a little bit later, but because of the history that American golf has here, the women are excited to be a part of it and looking forward to this summer for sure.
Well, we'll be back with Paige a little bit later in the show to discuss a little more on Pebble Beach. Coming up after the break, a new PGA Tour rule that threatens a one-year ban is aimed not at members, but non-members. Rex Hoggart will be here to explain.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Continuing on Golf Today, some news passed along on Tuesday, reported by our Rex Hoggart, the PGA Tour, moving to stem the flow of players to live golf, even beyond its own membership, with a new regulation that comes with a one-year ban. According to the regulation, which began with the 2022-23 season, any player who has participated in an unauthorized tournament is ineligible to compete in any event sanctioned by the PGA Tour for the period of 1 year. So with more on this news, it's time for Rex's Notebook. Golf Channel senior writer Rex Hoggart joins us now. Rex, players like David Pooge and Eugenio Chicara could not be suspended by the PGA Tour previously. That appears to be changing. Why did the PGA Tour feel like they had to make this change?
I think the PGA Tour has been thinking about this for really the last year. We all know what's happened between the tour and LIV Golf, and specifically the members who had gone and played LIV Golf and were suspended or gave up their membership. In this particular case, if you look at this long term, and I think David's probably the best example of this, LIV Golf, as we all know, has very, very deep pockets. And if they wanted to focus on sort of the next generation, the top college players, they could go after them with NIL deals. And those NIL deals could very easily be turned into contracts for them to go play in LIV Golf events. Now, David's a good example. He actually played in three LIV events last year after leaving Arizona State, two as an amateur, one as a professional. And it's important to point out, this does not just apply to PGA Tour events. It's Korn Ferry Tour events. It's Monday qualifying, it's Q School, so it's a very, very sweeping change. And clearly, this was the tour's answer to what they saw as a very, very concerning trend.
Rex, what's the latest in the status of the antitrust case between LIV and the PGA Tour? Because there have been a lot of kind of flurries of activity in the courts in California over the last couple of weeks.
And I think, Eamon, we're going to continue to see that. On Monday, the judge in Northern California settled a discovery dispute. There's going to be more of these that come up. This particular dispute was between LIV Golf and the PGA Tour. LIV Golf wanted to have as many members from Augusta National as possible have to submit to discovery. Now, the counter to that was Augusta National agreed to have the members of the Masters Tournament Committee, who, of course, decide all the regulations and who gets the invites into the Masters, as well as a handful of members as sort of the counter. The judge ruled in the PGA Tour and Augusta National's favor in that. Now, it's important to point out that there's a lot of these discovery disputes that are happening. Just 2 weeks ago, the same judge ruled in LIV Golf's favor in a similar dispute. LIV Golf wanted three tour employees, including Tyler Dennis, who's the president of the PGA Tour, named what they call custodians. And custodians are subject to a higher degree of discovery. The judge ruled in LIV's favor. And there's many more to come. And it's important to point this out because there is a deadline for written discovery in March. And that's coming up very, very quick. And there's a lot of ground for this court to cover in a very short amount of time.
Rex, you could moonlight in a different life as a reporter for Court TV with everything that you've had to follow the last year, year and a half with LIV Golf. So, Eamon, extrapolating on what Rex was sharing, the new regulation in place with the PGA Tour impacting non-members, what do you think of that approach?
You can understand why the PGA Tour is doing it, and they clearly feel emboldened in terms of their ability to enforce disciplinary proceedings on their own members. This is enforcing disciplinary proceedings on people who are not yet members. And in terms of the greater context, clearly they're trying to stem a flow, a potential flow of younger college and young talent to LIV Golf.
Which is where they would be very vulnerable currently.
It is where they would be vulnerable, but they've been attempting to deal with that through the PGA Tour university rankings, offering cards and access both directly to the PGA Tour and to the Corn Ferry Tour to the top college players in the country if they choose to go down that road. I think people who are inclined to go to LIV aren't necessarily going to be dissuaded by the idea of a one-year ban. The PGA Tour has been throwing a lot of carrots out there. This is like the stick. Personally, I think they should stick with the carrots and just bench the stick right now. I don't think they need to do this, but the threat of it, they clearly think will have some impact.
I would think strategically you understand that this is a logical next step for the PGA Tour, and I would think they're partially emboldened by what's occurred in the court system in California thus far to think legally they're on good footing to take this next step and kind of expand this protectionist moat that they're trying to have among players who want to eventually play in a PGA Tour-sanctioned event. Inclined to agree with you where it seems like it's slight overreach to then go to this level, but I understand why they want to implement this.
Yeah, I mean, essentially the Tour is creating a situation here where they are telling college players and talented young professionals that they can be held responsible for breaking the commissioner's regulations of a tour they are not yet members of. And to me, that just seems a little too futuristic in the application of the stick right there.
Minority Report, where you're getting arrested for a crime you haven't committed yet.
Yes. So.
Is it a pain when you're sorting through the mail? You have all that junk mail you just want to toss out. Yeah, not the case when invitations to compete in the 2023 Augusta National Women's Amateur were sent out back in January. 70 players to date have been confirmed for the championship, which will be contested March 29th to April 1st in Augusta. So each of the top 45 eligible amateurs in the final World Amateur Golf Rankings of 2022 have accepted invitations to the Augusta National Women's Amateur, including the past couple champions, defending champ Anna Davis will be there along with top-ranked Stanford standout Rose Zhang and one player heading to Augusta, the UCF's Jess Baker, will be making her Augusta National Women's Amateur debut.
George, last summer, Baker defeated Sweden's Louise Rydqvist 4-3 in the 36-hole final to win the Women's Amateur Championship and add her name to a long list of champions that included Babe Zaharias, Louise Suggs, Carol Semple Thompson, Katrina Matthew, Georgia Hall, Leona Maguire. During the 150th Open in St. Andrews, she competed in the Celebration of Champions as well on the old course at St. Andrews. And here's a look at her amateur career bio. Junior at the University of Central Florida, won the 2022 Women's Amateur Championship, as we noted, T26th at the NCAA Regionals, six top 10 amateur finishes.
Eamon, this is pretty sweet. Just taking the social media to post her invitation saying, "See you soon, Augusta." And Jess Baker now joins the show here on Golf Today. Jess, you seem so cool, calm, and collected inside the ropes. Level of excitement to actually receive the invitation to the Augusta National Women's Amateur. What was it like?
Yeah, such a surreal experience, but honestly, just so grateful to have this opportunity. And yeah, just to be able to open that letter with my name at the bottom was just an incredible feeling, and I'll remember that memory forever.
You've had a lot of incredible experiences recently. Take us back to the Celebration of Champions at the old course during the Open. You were there, obviously, as the Women's Amateur Champion. What was that like, and what was the coolest moment you had?
Yeah, that was an incredible experience. I think one of the best I've had from the win so far. But yeah, I mean, something completely unexpected, obviously, with the 150th Open. So yeah, we were the first group out. I was out with Anna Norquist, Kita Nakajima, and Colin Morikawa. So quite the four ball there. But yeah, just to sort of stand up on that first tee with, you know, thousands of people in those stands down the first tee was really nerve-wracking. But, you know, I just sort of, I composed myself, and I was actually expecting to go off last. So having my name called after Colin Morikawa was completely off what I was expecting. But I think it worked out well in the end because, you know, I didn't have to have it build up in my head, which helped for sure. But yeah, it was good to sort of get that down the middle and, you know, hear those people clapping. So it was an incredible experience just to see it all.
It's been like 6+ months and you're still the reigning women's amateur champ. How neat is that to hear that as part of an introduction before you tee off?
Yeah, honestly, it's so lovely. And, you know, that was such an amazing week. And to be able to carry this through the whole year, you know, experience the year beyond championship, two majors already with the AIG Women's Open as well. And, you know, to be able to add Augusta to that list as well as Pebble Beach for the US Open is just a year of amazing golf courses. So, yeah, just so excited to be a part of it, really.
Let's go to that US Women's Open at Pebble Beach. What's your level of excitement when you look forward to something like that? Have you been to Pebble before? Is it on your wish list of courses to see?
Of course it is, yeah. I mean, you know, Augusta and Pebble are two of the most iconic courses in the world. So yeah, I mean, that's start of July, so I'm going to take Augusta off my list and sort of put my mind to that one first. But yeah, no, just to be a part of it and, you know, experience this as an amateur, hopefully be able to have that experience as well as a professional. So it's all just, you know, growing and learning throughout this experience. And yeah, as I say, hopefully invaluable for me in the future.
We're showing some of the pretty pictures along the par 3 7th there at Pebble Beach. We have the tournament all week, AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. Will you try and watch any of that as part of a little preview before what you're going to experience this summer?
Absolutely, yeah. I'm trying to get any help I can, really. yeah, our England coach actually is with Matt Fitzpatrick, so I think he's keen on getting me some course guides out there. So, yeah, just taking everything I can.
So, Jess, when you come back to UCF after the summer you had, you win the amateur, you have that celebration of champions. Do you find you come back with more pressure of expectations? And is it external pressure or is it internal pressure where you're putting more on yourself because of what you accomplished last summer?
Yeah, there's a bit of both, I think. You know, obviously, the bar's just been completely raised from where I've been in the past. So there was a bit of internal pressure there. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, golf is one of those sports where you can constantly get better. And, you know, being able to add that to the list of things I've won and hopefully will win again, you know, it's just a bit more belief, actually. And I think being able to stand here and say I am the women's amateur champion does a lot for my self-confidence too. So yeah, as I say, it's all just about building and growing. And yeah, it's all those experiences.
You're balancing playing in all these high-profile events because of what you accomplished in winning the women's amateur, and then you also have the UCF golf schedule coming up. From a collegiate mindset, what would make this season a success for you if blank happens?
Yeah, I think, honestly, now, as you said, so I have a year and a half left, and I'm really wanting to get a collegiate win. So that would be amazing. But I think, honestly, just to be at the end of the season and say, yeah, I really enjoyed that. And I had the best time doing it. So that's sort of the goal for me, is just to keep loving what I'm doing and enjoying the process.
Well, we were talking right before your interview. You already won up on Eamon and I because you're in sunny Florida right now. Heading to the golf course. We were dealing with snow yesterday by the Golf Channel Worldwide headquarters. Thanks so much for spending some time with us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, from one college standout to another, we have the most recent winner in the game coming up, Fred Biondi, fresh off another collegiate title that happened just yesterday. Pride of Brazil joins us next.
Introduced back in 2020, PGA Tour University, presented by Velocity Global, identifies the best players in D1 college golf, provides membership opportunities on PGA Tour-affiliated tours. Velocity Global ranks players based on the last 2 years of their collegiate careers. Number one player in the final Velocity Global ranking will earn PGA Tour membership, while players 1 through 5 fully exempt and numbers 6 through 10 conditional will earn Korn Ferry Tour membership. Additionally, players finishing 6th through 20th in the Velocity Global ranking will earn fully exempt membership on PGA Tour Canada and PGA Tour Latino America. So as we take a look at this week's PGA Tour University Velocity Global Rankings, some of the names that you see on the page, we have a Florida Gator in Ricky Castillo, who's top 20 and rounding things out, just lost in a playoff recently to one of his teammates, who we're about to chat with in just a moment. As we transition to the top 10, you see Fred Biondi there, the other UF Gator, currently at number 3.
Number 3 on that list, University of Florida Senior. Fred Biondi and the Gator sealed the deal at the Seabest Invitational on Tuesday at TPC Sawgrass on the Dye Valley course. We're pleased to be joined now by Fred Biondi. Fred, you beat one of your teammates in the playoff yesterday on a fairly difficult golf course. Is it a little trickier for you when you face yourself against a buddy, a teammate in a playoff situation?
Yeah, it's very hard. I mean, everyone's trying to win out there. We're all very competitive, and but he's my roommate. He's one of my best friends, and it's tough. It's tough beating him, but I'm sure that he was trying to beat me, and I was trying to beat him, and we still love each other. We're still there for each other. So, yeah, it sucks being him in the playoff, not someone else, but he just happened to be, and he was good.
You able to play that card now as a roommate to say, hey, I beat you. It's your time to take out the trash, or you got to do the dishes. We know who won head-to-head here.
Yeah, I can do that.
How's coming off that victory and where you are now, top five, obviously, in the PGA Tour University Velocity global rankings, what level of confidence would you say you're playing with your golf game?
I feel very confident right now. I've been working pretty hard the last couple of months on my game with the help with Dudley and JC and my swing coach, Matt. We've just been working really hard and focusing a lot of areas of my game. And here at Florida, we've just been consistently working overall with the team. It's very competitive, playing a lot of golf together, and just trying to improve and shape my game the best I can for the future.
This was your third collegiate victory, Fred. So your game's obviously in pretty good shape. You got your degree in finance last fall. Are you impatient for the next chapter to start, or have you mapped out in any way what your next moves are going to be for your career?
I'm honestly just trying to stay in the present right now. I mean, I have an idea of what can happen or what I'm going to do, but I'm just enjoying the moment. I have 14 teammates here and two coaches that really care about me, and it's a great time here at Florida. So I'm just doing the best I can for the team here and trying to use those next couple months just to grow as a person and as a player.
We've seen a lot of South Americans in recent years ultimately go on and win on the PGA Tour. Was reading a headline from leading into the 2016 Olympics. USA Today had said you could fit the history of golf in Brazil on one scorecard. This was obviously 6-7 years ago, but what type of impact do you want to make with golf in Brazil, given what you've been able to do so far with an eye towards the future?
It would be great to grow the game there. It's not a popular sport by any means. Brazil is known for its soccer and pretty much it in the sports world. So if I have the opportunity of growing the game in any way I can, I would do it. And I think by succeeding the next level is definitely an easier way to do it. But by doing small projects with friends and everything there, it can also help. It's a little hard just because of what the culture of the country is, but I think that succeeding the next level will be the best way to achieve that.
You qualified for the US Open at the Country Club at Brookline last summer, Fred. What did you come away from that experience with, thinking that you'd seen the best in the world in close quarters? Where was the gap between where you were and where they are, and what you felt you needed to work on by the time you left the US Open?
The US Open was probably the best experience I could have taken. I think I learned a lot from talking to players and seeing them there. And yeah, I mean, again, everyone says it's not that big of a difference. I mean, I hit the ball very similar to how they hit the ball, and chip and putt very similar. I just think that the emotions and the expectations and kind of the mentality of it takes a big part on it. They've been out there and playing at that level for a long time, most of them, and showing up there and sitting in a locker room where with all your idols and the guys you watch play on TV week in and week out, it's tough. You just kind of feel like you don't belong there. But I feel like my level, my game level, and everything about it, it's very similar. And of course, it's not as good as them or better than them. But I feel like if I keep working and doing the things I'm doing, I can get to that level.
With that experience, was there a wow factor, or did you leave it thinking, okay, my game's maybe closer than I thought prior to teeing it up in the U.S. Open?
Honestly, I think that my game was very similar to them, theirs. And I just think that my emotions and the mental game was not as good as I thought. I think. But yeah, I mean, all these things I learned and try to implement on my game. And I think that leaving that week, I left with a lot of positives, regardless of the score.
Well, I would say a lot of positives with now a third collegiate victory in your hip pocket. And most importantly, obviously, bragging rights in the Biondi household right now in Gainesville. So congrats on the success so far this season, and looking forward to continue to follow your exploits with the Gators.
Thank you so much.
As Golf Today rolls on, Fred Biondi teed it up at the U.S. Open at the Country Club, and it was this guy who walked away with the hardware, winning his first career major. He's in the field this week at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. We're going to hear from the reigning U.S. Open champ, Matt Fitzpatrick, coming up.
His albums have names like Setbacks and Habits and Contradictions, so how could Schoolboy Q not be a golfer? The five-time Grammy-nominated rapper is in the field at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am, and he's with us on the show. Now, Jake Trout and the Flounders never got to the Grammys, but the band's lead singer is here, Peter Jacobson. He won the AT&T at Pebble Beach. He'll join us for a musical stroll down Amnesia Lane as Golf Today continues.
Golf Today.
Welcome back into Golf Today. I'm Eamon Lynch from Golf Week magazine alongside George Savarikas. And George just told me during the break that as far as he's concerned, psychologically, the golf season begins when the West Coast swing happens. What's your logic?
Yeah, but I feel like that five-week stretch, I mean, you start in the California desert, you go to Torrey, Pebble, Phoenix Open, Riviera, you get a lot of big names. Jordan Spieth just saying he's playing seven of the next eight events. Phil Mickelson was on tour. He would play all five in a row. It seems like you get the big name players, especially the West Coast guys, who are teeing it up almost every single week, or at least four of the five. And once you've have those 5 weeks in your rearview mirror, you see which guy stacked up a win, maybe a couple, and that's kind of a springboard leading into Florida and then, of course, Augusta. But I always feel like the meat of the golf season really starts where you see these guys consistently on the West Coast.
Well, I would also counter that by saying, well, the Century Tournament of Champions, it's had an up and down feel over the years, but now as a designated event, guaranteed the best players in the
for
world
sure
are predominantly going to show up there. You're a Chicago boy. How could your season not start when you see the sun come up in Hawaii in January?
No,
you're freezing.
Century Tournament Champions, always one of my favorite events to watch because it would be about negative 10 in Chicago, and then you're putting in your basement watching that event. But I feel like here you're getting full...
You're not talking about golf, George. You're talking about where the best parties are. That's where the season starts
well,
for you.
That's Phoenix.
Pebble, Phoenix.
That's my Masters.
That's your Super Bowl next week, literally.
Coming up next week. You'll be there as well.
I will. Looking forward to it.
All right, so the PGA Tour heading to iconic Pebble Beach Golf Links this week for the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. You can catch live first-round coverage Thursday, 3 Eastern, right here on Golf Channel. First round pairing, an interesting one. Matt Fitzpatrick, Matt Kuchar, the all-Matt duo. 12:47 Eastern time. They begin on Thursday for the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. So for more on some of the stars in the field, we say hi once again to Todd Lewis. T-Lou, take it away.
Thanks, George. Matt Fitzpatrick is the highest-ranked player in the field here at the AT&T at number 10 in the world. 2022 was, of course, a life-changing year for Matt. He won the U.S. Open. He is now considered one of the elite players on the planet. Now, the last time we saw Matt competing, it was in Maui at the Century Tournament of Champions. He's instead been working on his game, getting ready for this West Coast event. And he's also trying to battle through a bit of a nagging injury. I caught up with him to talk about where the state of his game is.
Just been practicing, enjoying some more time off. You know, the sort of December is obviously holiday time. It's always kind of busy. It's nice to have some downtime then. But, yeah, just spent 3 weeks at home in Florida, practiced, played plenty, and, yeah, just getting my game ready for the start of the season.
Where do you think your game is?
Not sure. No, not sure. I felt like I had a good few weeks, practiced well, just picked up a little bit of a neck injury up on Saturday, so I'm kind of just getting through that. It's just a little bit just holding me back a little bit, but on the whole, everything seems to be all right.
You played well here in the U.S. Open, top 10 last year. Do you have a connectivity with Pebble Beach?
I don't know. You know, I've had mixed. I've played this. This is my fourth time. I think I've missed the cut once, made it once, up made it twice, and had one top 10 of one of those made cuts. So, I like the week. It's an enjoyable week. You know, it's quite relaxed. Like I say, this week I've got a friend on the bag. It's a little bit more laid back. I think it's a good week for me to kind of just see where my game's at and ease my way into the year rather than kind of straight in the deep end.
Now, more on that injury that Matt was talking about in regards to his neck. He says it's not chronic, it's not consistent. It's kind of like having a crick in your neck, but it comes and goes, and it has limited him in practice, but he thinks it's not that big a deal and shouldn't really be that huge of a problem in regards to his competitive play here on the Monterey Peninsula. Now, his normal caddy, Billy Foster, is not with him this week. Instead, he's got a friend on the bag, Casey Fraggart, who was with him last year when he finished top 10. And he said, well, if we played that well last year, let's just keep a good thing going. So he's got his friend from the UK back on the bag here this week. And as you can tell in that interview, because he hasn't played competitively in a while and he has battled that neck injury a bit, he's coming here with low expectations. Not sure if that's good or bad for Matt as far as competing. We're going to find out when he tees it up starting tomorrow. Guys?
I always say be leery of the injured golfer, so we'll see how Matt does coming off that little hiatus before teeing it up this week. Some of the notables in the field at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. Tom Hoagie's the defending champ. Victor Hovland,
who won the U.S. Amateur at Pebble Beach
in 2019. Yep. Maverick McNeely, runner-up here a couple years ago back in 2021. And Webb Simpson, another one of those notable names. So Jordan Spieth, who's won here back in 2017. They were talking legacy in the game of golf. DJ, former world number one, came up. Here's Jordan Spieth with some interesting comments.
Liv's had a smaller effect on this event in particular, but it got me to wondering that the one thing I've heard over the last probably 6 or 7 months of the players who have gone over, the one guy that players seem to miss the most is DJ, who used to be a regular with yours here. Why is that? Why do people miss DJ?
Well, he had 21 or 22 wins. Yeah, he's a Hall of Fame player. Somebody who people and the celebrities here really enjoyed being around. He's a freak athlete that plays golf and really loved this event, loved playing with Wayne. And we had a blast. I know that because we had a blast with them for, 8 years, I think. We played with them, 8 or 9, we played together. If you're talking about in general and not just this event, you know, I think there's a number of guys that are missed. But I think DJ being maybe the first one to go over there and somebody who is never really controversial over here and more so just kind of worked his butt off, it paid off. You know, got his breakthrough at the U.S. Open, then went and won the Masters. Just a Hall of Fame player that didn't create controversy with any other players and played on a bunch of Presidents and Ryder Cup teams, represented them really well. He was a friend of mine. He is a friend of mine. I mean, I just haven't seen him. But I always really enjoyed playing with him and being around him. Plays fast, easy to play with, fun to watch, smooth. You know, I don't know what else to say. Yeah.
Your memories here, are they greater memories of DJ or AJ?
Well, I was always interested in the DJ and Jake banter. It was always really fun for me because Jake would always he was more interested in asking DJ questions than me, and like, DJ would kind of fire back. You know, there was some good banter between them. And I certainly missed that. And Doc or Wayne, his playing here, we'd always have a good match with them every time. So me and DJ wouldn't really talk smack to each other because we were both playing in the tournament. But, like, it was designated, and Wayne wasn't going to do it to me. So it was kind of a Jake and DJ back and forth within our match. And sometimes it was, awfully close to when DJ was actually hitting, but he hit so fast that hit so fast that it would surprise Jake and even me sometimes. So, yeah, a lot of good memories, unfortunately, that we won't continue here with them. But we had a great time in our tenure with them.
Jordan, thanks for joining us today.
Do I think DJ's going to be a Hall of Fame? Well, I imagine the criteria from what I've heard is like two majors and 10 wins, and he's got 20-something in two majors. So, I mean, I imagine so. Yeah, do you think so?
DJ, 24 PGA Tour wins with the two majors. How do you think the tour will handle that long term? Obviously, his credentials scream Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I thought Jordan was being very generous there in saying DJ has never courted controversy either as a player or with other players. The Hall of Fame is an interesting one. It's a long term question, that whereas LIV tends to be litigated in the short term. But it's the one long term question that really hasn't been brought up at all, is to what extent the Hall of Fame handles this going forward. Dustin Johnson's absolutely a Hall of Fame player. He ought to be in the Hall of Fame. He's hit all of the boxes that everyone else. He's got a better record than a lot of people who are in the Hall of Fame. The question is he going to add to that in the years to come? Will other players who've gone to live who are arguably Hall of Famers, Brooks Koepka with four majors, is he going to add to that legacy going forward? And to what extent is the Hall of Fame focused on the PGA Tour as the criteria by which it judges Hall of Fame entrants and, to some extent, international play? But that's going to be an interesting argument that I'm sure will be fought in years to come.
How do you think they should handle it?
I don't consider the LIV competitions to be particularly serious or worthy of...
No, but that regardless, because Phil's already a Hall of Fame guy. Yeah. Dustin Johnson, 24 wins, two majors. You could argue Brooks is already a Hall of Famer.
I don't believe in going back and revising somebody else's playing legacy simply because they left. If they're a Hall of Famer now, they're a Hall of Famer. I just don't think they're going to add to that.
No, that makes sense. I think if you're having a Hall of Fame, then it should encompass all aspects of it for players that already achieved it.
Exactly. It's not the PGA Tour Hall of Fame. It's the World Golf Hall of Fame.
Well, and these guys would be Hall of Famers for what they did on the PGA Tour as well. So we've seen some of the pros in the field for the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. Now let's look at the Amps. Aaron Rodgers, Bill Murray, they're each and every year. Josh Allen, Bill's quarterback, and the disappointing playoff loss. Some of the other names, a bunch of NFL guys. Larry Fitzgerald, who's almost won this event too many times. We got Schoolboy Q, who's what, one celebrity in the field. And after growing up in Southern California, 2011, he signed a major recording contract with Interscope Records. After signing with Interscope, Schoolboy Q began recording his major label debut studio album, Oxymoron. The album debuted at number one on the U.S. Billboard 200, and the first three singles all charted on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100 chart. Schoolboy Q has also found a love for the game of golf. Last year, he teed it up in the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am for the first time. He says that golf has taught him a lot about life and has helped him with his attitude on and off the course. So now let's welcome in five-time Grammy-nominated artist Schoolboy Q to the show. What's going on? I'll give it right back to you.
What up? How y'all doing, man? How y'all doing?
We're doing great. How you doing?
I'm great, man. Just had a little practice round. I'm just happy to be here once again, man. To be a part of this greatness, man, be around all these people. Man, it's a blessing. It's a blessing.
A day away from go time at Pebble.
Let's go. I'm excited, bro. I'm excited. Y'all have no idea, man. I think I'm going to shoot lights out. I might have to carry my pro. I don't know. No, I'm joking. Not that good.
There's actually always, I notice you're playing under 12 handicap here. There's always a lot of jibing and litigation over people's handicaps. Are you ready to defend yourself against sandbagging allegations if you have a really good week?
Not really, no. I mean, this is a tour course. I deserve a few more strokes. You know, I'm a 9 at my country club, but here I think I'm more of a 15 or something. You know what I mean? So it's like, you know, I don't think I could possibly sandbag here. I don't think I could possibly do it.
It's funny when fans watch the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am and you see the yardages and you're like, oh, it's not that crazy long. And you get out there and see the rough. You're like, okay,
yeah,
that's the difference from your local country club to what the pros face.
Exactly. A pro can put the club on the ball still on the rough. Me personally, at the club up twice. You get what I'm saying? So something that's 140, I would normally hit a pitching wedge, 9-iron. I would have to hit an 8-iron for sure to get out the rough. And the pros probably still using the same wedge they had to use, you know? Like, so, yeah, it's a big difference.
Scooterball, how did you find your way into this game? I've noticed you said on the record that it changed your attitude to life. How did that happen? How did that come about?
My friend, I was never interested in golf, ever. And it was on in the studio one time, and I told my friend to turn it off. Because I'm like, this ain't a real sport, just talking out of my butt. And he's like, I guarantee you this is the hardest sport you'll ever play. I'm like, yeah, right. And sure enough, he's like, I bet you 10 grand that you won't make a birdie in 2 years. He was thinking like I wasn't going to go through with the process. So I ended up joining a country club literally the next day. And I started playing, grinding, fell in love with it. And the third time I ever played, I made a birdie. And I've been hooked ever since. So it came from a bet. And it turned to a lifelong thing. And it just helped me with my life. And it's like, you know, I used to have tantrums, like, on the field. And my friends used to tell me, like, dude, you suck. Like, why are you getting mad? What you expect is about to happen. I'm used to being good at everything. And then he's like, bro, this is the humbling, most humbling sport you'll ever play. You know what I mean? And the more I kept playing, the more I kept analyzing myself. It's like, oh, I actually have a temper problem when things don't go my way. Oh, I do this, I do that. You get what I'm saying? You start picking at the little things that you do in your day-to-day life. And then I actually fixed them, and I became a better dad, became a better spouse. I became a better son to my mother. Like, I just became a better person, period, because of golf. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah. How long did it take playing the game of golf for you to have that introspective type of self-realization?
About 2 years, because I was in denial for 2 years that I sucked. I was like, there's no way I'm this bad. Like, it's no way. And then eventually I just let it be, and everything just started hitting me. And I got better. And like I said, it changed my life for the better. Better father, better everything.
Is golf's cool factor increasing? Or do you have to explain to people in the music industry how you got into this kind of nerdy game?
If you do music, you're pretty much a nerd too. You know what I mean? Like, I'm definitely a nerd. I sit in a room for 12 hours out of the day, and I like try to make a rhythm to a sound. Like, I'm a big nerd. So this game is super cool. Like, you know, more and more people from my communities are starting to get into it. I'm seeing more rappers get into it since I started playing. You got people like DJ Khaled now I see playing. I see Travis Scott playing. Seen 50 Cent playing. It's a bunch of people, Scarface, a bunch of people that's coming from my area now are playing. I'm not saying I'm the guy that put the battery in the back, but I am one of them. You know what I mean? And I'm happy to see it because, you know, it's a good thing. It's a good thing to rub elbows with a lot of people you would probably never talk to. You know what I mean? A lot of people I made friends with that I probably never talked to in my life, and now we're friends.
Yeah, it's a beautiful part of the game of golf. So Tiger's been posting a lot on his Instagram that he's been playing as well. Mentally, is there any type of headspace that's similar to when you're recording to when you're playing golf, or is it two totally different parts of your brain?
It's two different parts. This is peace of mind and learning myself, golf. And music is me being vulnerable as possible and trying my best not to be scared. Don't be scared. Say it. You know, when you make music, you have to be vulnerable and you have to say it. You have to be honest. You have to be truthful. You know, out here, you have to, like, you know, I don't know, man. I can't explain it, man. It's just a life lesson. Golf is a life lesson. And you're trying to get better every day. Music, I'm nasty. I'm going to be nasty at music my whole life. Golf, I'm going to be working on my whole life also. You know what I mean? So.
You get ready for a show, and you've performed on massive stages in front of huge crowds. And then this week, you're performing in front of big crowds, but it's something totally different that you do as a hobby and not professionally. What are the nerves like playing golf at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am compared to when you're on stage?
Okay, so when I'm on stage, I can be a performer in front of 30,000 people and feel calm as ever. It can literally be 20 people to 100 people here watching me. And I don't even know if I have feet. My first time teeing off at Pebble Beach, I felt like I didn't even have feet. I was so nervous. I was dizzy. Like, and I struck it perfect down the middle, man. And I didn't know how I did it. I gave my caddy the club back, and I'm like, I don't know what just happened, but it happened. And then the nerves went away after that first tee. It's just that first tee, though. But, yeah, I'm just, like, floating, bro, out there, bro. Like, I'm just, yeah, that first tee. Once you get over that first tee, you good.
You're playing this week with Garrick Hegoe, a PGA Tour winner. How did that pairing come about, and has he taught you anything yet before you head to that first tee?
Nah, I just met him on the range, man. He's a good dude, good kid from South Africa, man. I can't wait to play with him, man. He hasn't taught me anything yet, but I'm going to ask a whole lot of questions. Hopefully I don't mess him up, but I'm definitely going to pick his brain this week. I'm definitely going to pick his brain.
Well, they say the Ams are dangerous their second time around Pebble Beach. So we'll be watching for you this week. Enjoy it.
Thank you guys, man. I appreciate you guys, man. You guys enjoy yourself.
The U.S. Open winners. Mentioned Tiger in 2000. Graham McDowell went on to win in 2010. So that's the list of the six U.S. Open winners at Pebble Beach. The LPGA major schedule. Remember, the Chevron Championship has that new home, the club at Carlton Woods. KPMG Women's PGA Championship, Baltusrol in June. A month later, in July, U.S. Women's Open presented by ProMedica is at Pebble Beach Golf Links. Mundi Evian Championship, end of July. And then in August, AIG Women's Open at Walton Heath Golf Club. So Paige McKenzie with us once again. Paige, pretty exciting to see Pebble hosting a U.S. Women's Open later this summer. What type of venue do you think it's going to be for the women's game?
I'm so excited. We heard from John Sawin actually yesterday from Pebble talking about how the golf course setup will change. So I'm taking notes this week because I will be on the call for the Women's U.S. Open, and I'm sure a lot of the women that will be playing in that will be taking notes as well. They're going to be playing the tees that are more similar to what the amateurs are going to be playing at 6,500 yards. But the golf course will play tougher and narrower as we expect with a U.S. Open venue. But exciting to finally see for the very first time the women playing a U.S. Open at Pebble Beach. You see the history. I was smiling through that entire highlight because so many of those were familiar shots. It's a familiar golf course. As with a lot of championships, it's about the golf course. And so many people tune in just to be able to see it.
And you hope that's not like a staple venue going forward, Paige.
Absolutely. I would hope so. I mean, you see that list where it seems like every 10 years the men get to revisit Pebble Beach for a U.S. Open, a major championship, and I would hope that the women are kind of added into that rotation as well and carve their history in with the names and the likes that we saw on that list with the Tom Watson, with the Tiger Woods, Tom Kite, Jack Nicklaus. I want to see those highlights with the women as well.
Yeah, that would be great. All right. Appreciate it, Paige. Still more to come on Golf Today.
But Peter Jacobson, he first played the AT&T Pro-Am at Pebble Beach way back, 1977. He won it in 95 and bid farewell last year. And after the break, Jake's going to be here to tell us how his years of poor play prevented his partner from Jack Lemmon from achieving that lifelong dream of making the cut at Pebble Beach. We'll be right back.
How about this last night at Pebble Beach? Ryan Palmer and Canelo Alvarez were named as the 2022 recipients of the Arnie Awards. The awards honor golfers who give back through charitable work. Ryan Palmer has supported local junior golf tournaments, funded college scholarships, and built indoor practice facility for the West Texas A&M University golf program, as well as helping families afford their children's dental care. Here's Ryan from last night on the honor.
I'm sitting in my living room one day with my dad, Butch Palmer, and it just dawned on me it's something I needed to do to give back to the city that gave so much to me. You know, watching my dad perform a lot of events with the Shriners, he was part of an unbelievable organization, the Coors Cowboy Club. I got to attend a lot of events that they did a lot of things for, but just seeing what he did amongst the city of Amarillo and with the Shriners, and you know, that's what instilled in my heart to want to give back to the folks that helped raise me as a player.
Look at all the initiatives that the Ryan Palmer Foundation is involved in. Breast Cancer Research, Brighter Smiles Initiative, Ryan Palmer Junior Invitational Golf Tournament, also of the North Texas PGA Junior Golf Foundation Grant Initiative, just to name a few. All right, let's flash back to one of the most famous moments we've seen in AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am history, 1987. Clint Eastwood, Jack Lemmon, Peter Jacobson, Greg Norman helping Lemmon extract a miraculous, dangerous shot now known as the human chain. Then in 95, Peter Jacobson came from out of nowhere. That final round with a 65 at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am, finished with a then tournament scoring record of 17 under 271. It was his first win in 5 years, beating David Duval by 2 shots. What a special Sunday that was for Jake. Here's what he's done in his career, the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. 31 appearances, first start, not to age the man. Came back in 1977, made the cut at the 1992 U.S. Open in Pebble Beach. 10 appearances at the Pure Insurance Championship on the PGA Tour Champions. And now it's our past champion chat with Peter Jacobson. Jake, great to see you, buddy. I mean, you're in one of the best spots in the country this week at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. What's it like being back out there?
It's unbelievable. You can see behind me, the sun is shining, but it's windy. It's howling out here. And we're just behind the 18th green, and it's just wonderful to be here. This is a second home for me. As you mentioned, my first PGA Tour event was right here in 77, and I played last year as my final PGA Tour event in 2022. So I'm back here just hanging out, doing some promotional work with Steve John and the tournament committee. We gave away the Jack Lemmon Award last night. We're doing our new golf trivia game show tomorrow night for the volunteers. I wake up in the morning, I have a smile on my face because I'm at Pebble Beach.
Jake, I heard you on SiriusXM with our buddy Taylor Zarzar a couple of weeks ago talking about the importance of events like this, events like the American Express, in terms of supporting the tour and how you need to see more players support events like this. Why do you think these events are so important in your mind?
Well, Eamon, it's early in the year, and what a better way to get the tour off to a great start than having the chance to be inside the ropes with those that support our game, support our tour financially, spiritually, emotionally, than right here at the AT&T. You don't know who you're going to get paired with. It's great to get paired with a Jason Bateman or a Jack Lemmon or a Clint Eastwood, but when you get paired with an executive vice president or a CEO of a major corporation that titles an event on our tour, that's a very special opportunity for you not only to support the tour and to help your own brand as a player, because you never know who you're going to meet along the way. And I learned that from the great Arnold Palmer and Jack Lemmon. Always treat everybody with respect because they deserve it. They're out watching you. And this tournament, I think, sets the stage for a great year on the PGA Tour.
Speaking of those relationships with sponsors, are you concerned at all by the changes you see to the PGA Tour schedule now, where there are some events that are designated, some that aren't? And is there a risk of creating some kind of caste system on the PGA Tour between sponsors? Or do you think that's just formalizing what's always been the case in terms of some events just get a better field than others?
Well, when I started back in 77, there's always been a little bit of a caste system, but that basically was determined by each individual tournament, how hard they worked to be able to get their field in, how to groom their players. But I do worry about that. I think the LIV thing has kind of started this whole thing. I just think that the LIV, it's a great thing for these players to have won the lottery, and they got paid a lot of money by the LIV series to retire. These guys are gone. They're on an exhibition series. The PGA Tour is so strong with the players, the sponsors, the tournament directors, the charities in the communities where we play, that I worry about that. I would not have designated or elevated any events. I would have locked arms with all these people and said, look, we're going to continue to do what we do on the PGA Tour because we have drama. We have a lot of competition. The thing over there, it's like the Harlem Globetrotters. They're well paid. They're very talented. But the outcome is of no consequence. So I worry a little bit about that, Eamon.
Peter, is it funny at all that more people remember what happened in 87 than necessarily the win? And you go, hey, I won here in 95. But it's always the human chain that comes up because it was such a neat signature moment.
Yeah, it was one of those moments. I played Cypress Point yesterday with Huey Lewis and Chris O'Donnell and our host, Dick Barrett. And I always go over there to that spot, and I always say a prayer to our long, great, departed friend, Jack Lemmon. But that happened out of the blue, and it was Clint Eastwood that did that. Jack's ball was hanging on the edge of the cliff, and we said, let's let it go. And Clint said, no way, man. We got to play that shot. So he grabs a wedge, and he grabs Lemmon, and then what happened was with me and Norman and Pete Bender and Clint, and it was great because Lemmon got it out. Nobody gets a ball out of the ice plant. He gets up, the next shot, 60 yards, shanks it right into the ocean, probably where it should have been in the first place. But this tournament, the history, the tradition, the people, the spirit, the energy really is what golf is all about. So many people play golf other than on the PGA Tour, and they're here smiling. They love the game. A well-struck shot brings everybody back, including tour players. We don't see a lot of great shots out here by the amateurs, but you see a lot of smiles. And people love being here. And it's always an honor for me to be in attendance.
And people think that happened at Pebble, but that was actually 17th at Cypress, wasn't it?
16 at Cypress Point. That's correct. Yeah.
Peter, do you feel any guilt over the years at how you stopped Jack Lemmon actually making the cut at Pebble Beach? Because the man lived for the idea of playing Sunday at Pebble Beach. And even the year you won the tournament, he didn't get to play the weekend.
Well, that's true. And the Jack Lemmon Award, which we gave last night to Michael Pena, the award goes to the amateur who helps his pro the most, which is ironic because Jack Lemmon, the year I won, he helped me one shot. So, yeah, poor Jack. He was a long-suffering golfaholic like a lot of us are. We don't always play the way we want to, but Jack walked with me on that Sunday that I won, and he was a very special guy. And again, I will say that he was the ultimate amateur, and everybody should try to act and play out here like Jack Lemmon.
When we see videos like The Human Chain and a lot of other videos that have featured you over the years, and even your late buddy Payne Stewart, you always seem to have a lot of fun in your generation. Do you feel as though the guys these days, they don't look as though they're having as much fun as you did?
Well, I don't see that, but when I used to go to the range, it was always Fluff, my caddy and I, that's it. Everybody seems to have a team these days. There's the swing instructor, the mental guy, the nutritionist, the fitness person, and I think sometimes they lose the fact that it's all about fun. Golf's fun, games are fun, but I do understand it also is that they're trying to build their career, build their resume, make a living, raise their kids out here on tour. It's hard, but sometimes you have to step back and take a look at what you're doing and say, I'm the luckiest guy in the world to be able to play golf for a living. That perspective is something that's never lost on me. And I think a few years, Fuzzy Zeller and the late Payne Stewart, we never lost sight of that fact.
Well, Jack, I got to say, one of my favorite memories last year, seeing UMC, getting to meet Huey Lewis, can speak for both Damon and myself. We're jealous that we're here and you're there at Pebble Beach. Enjoy the week.
Well, you know what? I'm glad you're there, and I'm glad I'm here, too. So we can agree on something.